What's up, everyone? We are back with another episode of Pound for Pound. I am the Nigerian Nightmare, Kamaru Usman.
Henry Cejudo, a.k.a. Triple C.
A Shot of Lime production.
Henry Cejudo, UFC 3.
Goat.
Cejudo, as some people may say sometimes.
Goat.
Yeah. UFC 306 went down last night, and man, what an event! And I'm gonna say this: what an event aesthetically. Let's be. I think a lot was made of oh man, it's the greatest event ever, greatest this, greatest that. You know, to where I don't like when people do that. I don't like when all this talk and all of that is done, because then your expectation is set overly high. So, but all in all, I do believe it's obviously aesthetically, it's the greatest event that we've ever had, because it shows you just what they can really do on the special effects part of it. I mean, it was phenomenal. Phenomenal. Hey, did you notice at the end of this? Did you watch all the way through?
Yeah.
Did you notice that this is the first time they credits rolled? Really?
Credits rolled. Oh yeah, no. I mean, yeah. I think for this event, Kamaru, because if you notice, like, they're literally giving the story of the Mexican people. I mean, and talk about it. It's a shame that's only gonna be one and done, but I don't think so, man. There's a lot of things that Dana White says, and he always goes back on his word. You know, sometimes good, sometimes bad. I personally think that they're going to end up bringing the Sphere for one of these, for maybe not, you know, in the near future for International Fight Week, but showing the history of Mexico, you know, showing Oscar De La Hoya, showing Juan Marquez, and these highlights. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. Was it the greatest card ever of all time? No, the greatest production by far. There has never been a better production than what the UFC, Dana White, and the Sphere has done.
I 1,000% agree with you. You hit the nail on the head, Henry. Greatest production ever, because you can see the credits were rolling at the end. Producer, executive producer, castment, like talent. That was a first for me to see. Obviously, at the end of every pay-per-view event, the copyright stuff, all of that comes through, and those credits roll. But this one was the first you can tell, and I think it was maybe DC or someone over the broadcast continued to mention that someone's going to win an Emmy for this. And well, I don't doubt that. I mean, it was such a phenomenal production that and the fights delivered too. The fights delivered, which was, Henry, obviously what we want to talk about. Let's just jump into the elephant in the room, as we like to say, as the saying goes. Merab Dvalishvili went in there and dominated Sugar Sean O'Malley for 5 rounds. Dominated him for 5 rounds and was able to get, I thought, a unanimous decision, but there was judges' scorecards, 48-47.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, first of all, let me start off with, like, man, talk about, dude, you have to be careful, man. These judges, they need to pay for what they do, man. Like, where is accountability on some of these guys? And some of these guys have been boxing judges for years, you know? Sometimes I don't wonder what the hell they're looking at, but the same thing what Dana says is don't leave it in the hands of the judges. I mean, that scorecard is absolutely ridiculous. I don't even know what round Sean even won. Maybe the fifth, because he hit him with the body, but he did get taken down at the end, and he did get beat up on bottom. I don't even – maybe give him that one, but other than that, that was a 50-45 slaughter. I mean, talk about being controlled. You know, and there's one thing about Merab that he does very well is he's a freestyle fighter. He's not your traditional conventional or southpaw. He's a freestyle fighter. A lot like how Bilal is. These are a lot like how Bilal, Khabib, and a lot of these guys that just they'll run. They'll literally run and punch. They'll blitz and kick. They'll do certain things where they don't have the traditional stance. I do believe that Merab's movement was a problem for Sean. Sean really couldn't cut him off. and then the level changes that he was doing, and then to eventually take Sean down, make Sean get up. And the more that Sean was getting up, he probably should have probably just stayed on the bottom and maybe recovered and started taking his chances at the beginning of every round as it restarted. But Kamaru, what can I say? I predicted these things. Sean is not accustomed to going five rounds, and he is not accustomed to people on his legs. And I just felt like I still go back and say, hey, that fight with Aljamain Sterling, that was a fluke too. Aljamain was still in that fight, and people thought I was just hating. It's like, no, I've been in the world, Marab. I did a whole lot better than Sean when I did even fight Marab. I mean, I took down Marab. Like, Marab is lucky that I had that groin injury, but for what I did the first round, if I would have kept that up for the third, that was going to be the damn game plan. And I'm still planning on running it back, but either way, Sean O'Methley got his ass kicked for five rounds, and I can't wait to get him next, Kush.
First and foremost, at the end of the day, it is what it is. We knew that there was a possibility that something like this could happen. And yes, Marab went out there and he delivered on it. Based on the body of work that Sean O'Malley has put in before and how he's been able to deal with certain things before, obviously not a guy like Marab, but I felt that Sean was going to be able to potentially deal with something like that. But it's sometimes it's not your night. Sometimes it's just not your night. And it just wasn't his night. He looked flat. He looked like he really couldn't get going. It wasn't the Sean that we became accustomed to seeing, bouncing, moving, sliding in and out, dribbling a basketball. It just seemed like he didn't have that spunk, that same energy off rip. And hats off to Marab. Henry, you called it. You hit the nail on the head. I didn't necessarily think it was going to be as easy. The fight started out great. Sean was able to come out great. He was pressuring. He looked good, but then it just seemed like he just kind of almost stepped into quicksand and it just couldn't get going again. But all in all, it is what it is. I'm anxious to see where Sean goes from here. I've mentioned time and time again, I know it's a tough thing to be able to deal with when you become champion. Everybody thinks it's just, oh, you're just champion. You just stay there. You become champion, and then now you become in demand. And the reason why a lot of us become champion is because we can separate ourselves from the pack. And the way that you separate yourself is why you continuously being disciplined and on time and making sure that you are getting in that work time after time after time after time again. And when you become champion, now you're in such high demand to where you're requested here and there and this and that and do this and do that, to where that cuts away from that time that you've put in to separate yourself. So the gap starts to close. So yeah. I'm anxious to see where Sean goes from here.
Right. But sometimes this is what happens too, Kamaru. And I think we should do a list of fighters who are currently UFC champions and how they're actually even pushed. Like, Sean never went through the ringer like we did to get to the title. You know, he never really went through the top 10 to be able to get there. Yeah, granted, he did get that victory over a guy like, Aljamain Sterling.
Peter Yan.
Even that one. Like, I'm going to say it right now, because everybody saw the damn fight. I don't know which round. Was it a great fight? Yes. But I don't know which round he won either. Sometimes But then finally, he goes up against a guy who is well-rounded. It's like you, Kamaru. Like a lot of these guys that had good hands, but when you go up against somebody that can mix the fight, it changes the game, dude. It just changes the game. I mean, pretty much Sean was speeded up to the title shot. And then even Alex Pereira. Like, what's going to happen when they really give Alex Pereira a guy like Ankulaev, a guy that can mix his fight, a guy that's vicious on top, a guy that has that submission threat, and a guy that has great striking as well? I mean, it's a trip, and you're not wrong, Kamaru, when you say, how can I put people like that on pound for pound when they're just being fed? They're just being fed with favorable fights, and that's just been what's going on with Sean. So I personally would love to fight him. I think with all the trolling that we have done to each other, we both live in the same damn city. But I just don't think that he's going to want to fight me, particularly right after this performance that Merab did to him. Like I said, man, like he was lucky. Merab was lucky that I was hurt in that fight. You know, I had no conditioning due to not being able to wrestle because of a torn groin. But I took my chances because I wanted to fight him. I wanted to fight at the sphere. I wanted to beat him up in front of everybody. But that's not the case. So I think moving forward is if Sean O'Malley is willing and wants to fight this troll who's a true king of Arizona, then well, then here I am. But if not, Kush, I'm making my way back down to 125 pounds, man, because I'm not going to waste my time with, you know, with the freaking cuck. But if he wants to do it, I would love to do it. Dana White, let's make that fight happen. And I just feel like there's too much animosity. There's too much history between us. But more likely, he's probably going to pick a Jan again because Jan, he knows that Jan's going to strike. Or he's going to pick a guy like maybe Corey Sandin. So I would be the least guy that he would want to fight because a healthy Triple C will murder him even worse than what Merab did to him. But check out my tweet, though, Kush. Check it out. Read it out to me. See what you think.
I'm not reading that. I'm not reading that. What?
Come on. Be a good sport.
Come on.
Be a good sport.
Come on.
Be a good sport. Well, let me read. Hey, old man. Hey, you want to be the next Conor McGregor? Well, now you are. Neither of you bums can defend a takedown. I'm teaching wrestlers for cokeheads at 8 a.m. See you this morning. Sincerely, Triple C. What do you think? You like it? You like my tweet, Kush?
What do you think my answer is going to be?
I think it'd be like, that's you. I'd be like, that's the king of cringe.
No, it's you. It's you, 1,000%. That's you.
There's no chuckle. There's no chuckle, Kamaru.
It's you. So, yeah, it's you. It's funny because it's you. But, you know, I just don't partake in the back and forth. You're good at it. That's what you do. Well, this is my take. I just think for what you said, obviously, with Sean, listen, Sean did beat Peter Yan. He did have fights that seemed like they were favorable matchups, but at the time, he dealt with what he had to deal with in order to get to the top. Because even at the end of the day, and the same thing with Conor McGregor. When people say, oh, Conor had favorable matchups and this and that. When it's a train that's coming, everything, it's to be a star, you're not just, it's not just there. Everything has to align at the at the right time. Everything has to align. You have to perform still. The company has to make money still. You have to be able to sell still. Personality, the way that you carry yourself, it all has to align in order for you to become that star. So Conor McGregor had to do what he did to become that star. Yes, did he have matches that were favorable to his style on the way up there? Absolutely. But he still went in there and said, I'm going to take this guy out in three rounds, and he did that. Sean O'Malley still went in there and said, I'm going to take Aljo out in two rounds, and he did that. And these things. So these are the recipes for what makes a star. It's not just, oh, they handpicked this guy, that guy, that guy, that guy. And then you're just winning decision after decision after decision to be stars. No, they did the best they could with what they were presented. I do agree with you. Obviously, the Chito Vera fight is completely different than a guy like Merab, who is going to grab your neck, who's going to take you down, who's going to make you work back up, you're going to have to really dig deep and find a different type of you know, just motivation in order for you to be able to get through that fight and finish the fight. And so I think it's a combination of all of those things. Yeah, I do think obviously when you're at the top of the hill, the next hungry it's what's his name, Scar underneath Mufasa going, yeah, I'm next. Wanting your kingdom is a bunch of them. It's just killers. It's just murderers right there next to you, waiting for you to come down. And so, yes, of course, if now look at the fight. If he has to fight someone, he's going to have to fight someone like yourself. He's going to have to fight someone like Peter Yan again, potentially, but we've already seen that. Or he's going to have to fight Sanhagen, who is no slouch for anybody. You've got Umar there, who Umar is next for Merab, and or or yourself. So yes, any one of those fights is going to be difficult for him to rebound off of. That's just what comes with when you come off the losing the title.
Yeah, personally, I feel like his hype trim is over. I think whether he fights me, Jan, or Corey Sandhagen, like that's all you had to see. I personally think the better matchup would probably be Jan, because Corey Sandhagen's got good takedowns, dude. He's been able to show that when he did to Rob Font, and he's good up top, and he's got a submission game. And then obviously myself, I'm gonna tell you what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna kick his legs. I'm gonna use a lot of movement. I'm gonna get to him. I'm gonna take him down. I'm gonna beat him up. I've already said it before, but what's next for a guy like Maroc? If you go back and you watch that fight, I mean, there is that crazy weird moment with Merab and
right
Merab and you know Tim.
What was going on with that?
Apparently, they're throwing shade at him, and I thought that was super weird that Herb Dean happened to stop the fight because you know Merab was over there complaining that they were saying all kinds of crazy shit. I don't know what was said. But whatever that may be, I thought that was a bit weird. And I think that's one thing that I could say about Maram, that he shouldn't be worried about what's going on the outside. Like, it's going to keep fighting. I think that's crazy, too, on Herb Dean's side, to be able to stop the fight, stop the action, and then restart it. So then Maram was able to get the takedown. Then he started and did what he did.
I agree. It was a very, very weird moment. I thought, for a second there, I thought maybe he didn't have his mouth guard in his mouth, and he's pointing to his corner like, "Hey guys, you forgot my mouth guard." But what could possibly be said, unless the corner is just saying vulgar, crazy things to Merab? How could you stop? How do you stop a performance to say something like that? To hey, be quiet. No excessive. I guess it's called excessive coaching. That's the rule. It's a rule. It's excessive coaching. So I think that was ridiculous, because at the end of the day, too, it's if that's a tactic that you're as a fighter, when you're in there, you're supposed to be focused on your guy and just go ahead and get it done, and not worried about what they're saying, because that's they can hear your corner just as much as you can hear theirs. But it is a potential tactic for their corner to say certain things, because Henry, I'll tell you a story. My first loss ever, my second professional fight, which I took on short notice with a guy that I thought I was just going to walk over, because everyone that knew him was telling me, you're going to walk over him. And so it gave me a false confidence, because I'm just like, all right, I'm going to do that. When my teammate said, I don't know this guy. So I go in there with the guy. He had some experience. I think he's maybe 8-9 fights deep or something like that. But I didn't care. I went in, threw a 1-2, took him down, mounted him, full mount. And I'm trying to land strikes, and he does a weird – he was 6-something, 6-foot-something, super tall, throw his legs around me. I'd never seen that before because I'd barely been grappling. And boom, I start to panic. So I'm like, get up. Let me get up. So I'm trying to get up. And he goes for a leg lock. I don't know that either. I'm trying to get up. Then he climbs up my back, and he's in a rear naked choke. And so he's in a rear naked choke. I'm like, screw this. I'm not giving up. I stand up with him on my back, and we're up against the cage, and he's squeezing my face. And keep in mind, I've barely been grappling. I don't know how to defend all this stuff here. I just know get his hands. So I'm holding his hands, and he's squeezing. Now he gets the choke a different way, but it's not in. It's over my face. So you know that. That's just uncomfortable, right? And I hear his corner screaming at him and saying certain things to him. And now I'm in my head. I'm fighting this. I'm thinking, holy shit, I don't know what's going on. How do I fight this? Maybe I should go back down to the ground and try to fight my way out of this. But then I realized, I'm like, wait, no, you don't know what you're really doing down there either. So yeah, don't go down there. And then in the process of that, I'm tired. My mind is starting to get weary. And then I hear his corner go, he's going to tap. He's tired. He's going to tap. He's going to tap. And so now in my mind, I'm going, am I going to tap? Am I tired? Now I'm starting to panic, and which ultimately led to me going, okay, I'll live to fight another day, which the rest was history. I felt so bad about it later, but that is a potential tactic of something that could work. So for I don't know
everything,
exactly
everything
what was
should
said.
Go right. Everything should right. go right.
Right. So I don't know exact. Well, it depends. Not everything should go, because a corner, you're in an arena with 20,000 people. A corner shouldn't be screaming, "Marab's a fuck B word, effing B word," or "Marab's." You shouldn't be doing all that. Focus on your fighter. That's what you're there for. Not talking about the other guys. So I don't know exactly what was said, but that was a super weird moment. And I just remember going, and not just that too, towards the end of the fight in the fifth round. And Joe Rogan mentioned something about this. And Henry, I agree. You shouldn't be telling a guy once they're taken down and they've been taken down over and over and over and they're getting beat on, you shouldn't be telling, "Work, or I'm going to stand you up." No, you shouldn't. That shouldn't be your job, to come in and save the guy, to stand him up and save him just to give him a chance. This is a fight. He has to work up. He has to find a way to get back up on his feet. So that I completely agree with.
Yeah, which is crazy. We talked about it a little bit earlier, too, with Irby. This is where he has to be careful with. And I'm still like, I don't think that kick would ever happen when you got kicked in, in Utah. Against
correct,
Leon.
Of course.
And then I was like, dude, I was so pissed. I'm like, dude, why didn't Herb Dean, you're in a position where you're working. He just put you guys in neutral position. And then the last minute of the fight, boom, the kick comes. You know what I'm saying? Like, I personally feel like there has to be a reconstruction of what they're actually doing, the Nevada State Athletic Commission, and really understand as judges, because I don't know what round Sean even won, but even something like that, what Herb Dean was doing. So I think Dana White needs to step in and really understand what is it that's going on. But moving on, I mean, what's going to be next for a guy like Marab Demolish Billy? I mean, he's talking about Davis Figueiredo. I mean, he's talking about potentially, fighting Piotr Jan again. I mean, there's only one guy in the UFC. This is what they want. This is what the UFC is going to do. And I will say this about Marab Devalishvili. His run is going to run out. And I said this before on the passes. Umar is just too dangerous. Umar could take him down as well. He's got good top control. He's got great striking. Good distance recognition. And when they asked Marab Devalishvili the question, Umar Nurmagomedov is here. What do you think about your potential fighting next? He's like, "Oh, I love the UFC. I love Dana White. Global warming. Let's make America great again." Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he never really answered the question. I mean, this is already like Marab knows, man. Marab has a respect for Umar. And I personally just think he's in trouble. So Marab's going to be one of these fighters with all due respect. And I respect the fact that, one, that he beat me. And then, two, the fact that he came on our show. But if you don't fight a guy like Umar, the UFC is going to make you fight a guy like Umar. Your career as a champion is pretty much done.
So I understand exactly everything you just said, Henry, and I agree to some degree. First and foremost, you're not at the point yet. Like you're close. You're right there in the ballpark, because that's the thing too, is when you arrive with the stardom of a guy like Sean O'Malley and Conor McGregor, and or you're John Jones or even I was at a place in time in my career as a champion to where you had a little bit of an influence. You have that influence, but at first you don't. Think about that. Think about, I just become champion. There was a guy lurking around that was chirping. That was the dark horse. That was the boogie. That was the real threat, which was Kobe Covington at that time. And I had no choice. I had no choice. It wasn't, "I'm going to fight that, I want the next guy up or this guy up," or I had no choice. It was Kobe Covington. And so I had to earn the respect of being able to have an opinion on who I wanted to fight. And I think Marab is in that situation right now to where he has to fight that guy. And that guy right now is a Umar. Now, we sat with Umar in Vegas, where we were able to get to know him a little bit better and his next plans, and that episode will be out very, very soon. But I with Marab here, it's a good thing. This is what we do as fighters. If you're a real fighter, this is what we do, because I know fighting a guy like Umar worries a guy like Marab. Not that he's afraid. There's no such thing as afraid when we, because we're afraid of every, Henry, when you, every fight, we're afraid. We have, we're anxious, we're worried, we have all these things, but from being that way comes courage. And that's something that we all have, because even though you're afraid, even though you feel this, you feel that, you still walk towards that octagon. You still get in there. You still let them close that door. You still let the referee ask you, are you ready? Are you ready to fight? You still do that. So Merab's not afraid, but I know he's worried about a guy like Umar. And sometimes those are the guys that really put you on that next level. Merab might come out there and look like freaking the best we've ever seen. So yeah. I needed that dance partner. Colby Covington gave me that. And so that's what Merab, at this point, I think if I had any advice for Merab, is to embrace that. It's to embrace that. You're right. When they did ask him that question, he kind of, you know, danced around it, politically correct, which is, I'm like, man, my man's English was on point. He was able to, like politicians do, he was able to dance around. He was able to dance around it. But for Merab, congratulations. What a performance. And yes, it's okay that a guy like Umar worries you, but this is what really elevates you to that next point. So I can't wait for that fight. I think it's going to be a phenomenal fight. I think it's a humongous fight. Obviously, I feel like Abu Dhabi might be too soon to do that for a guy like Merab, but if he's not hurt, then hey, why not, Henry?
Yeah, no, for sure, man. Well, either way, Sean lost. Sean, I'm here. My next neighbors, are you there, Sean? Are you there? Like, I am here. If you want to strap, which I know you're probably going to go with the striker now, not everybody saw your damn deficiency, but I still say it, and I'm going to say it. Sean, you absolutely suck, you precious. But whatever, man. Moving on to the Colby event. Alexa Grasso.
Let me say this.
This is another one, Kamaru. This is another one that I was right on again. I wish you would have done a dozen eggs on that shiny head of yours. But I told you, Valentina Shevchenko made those adjustments. She played the lateral movement. She was able to catch Alexa Grasso coming in because she's super heavy, because she's very predominantly boxing heavy. Where a girl like Valentina was just able, her experience took over. She was able to just take her down, be up top, get out of certain submissions. And this was another 50-45. Again, but Kush, I'm on a roll. After this, I can't wait for Underdog so you can crack at least one egg on that shiny head, Kush.
Yeah, no, Henry, you're absolutely right. There wasn't a bunch to score from this. It wasn't a lot to talk about on this fight. It just seemed like the fighters were, either they were just tired or they were drained, but it just seemed like they didn't have the same urgency, the same spunk that they had. Like it was rare. Like, I'm not going to say rare, but seeing Alexa Grasso not really have that in and out, that it just seemed like they were missing a little bit more movement and speed and just agility. It just seemed like it wasn't there. Same for Sean O'Malley, but same for Alexa Grasso. It just seemed like she wasn't there. And when she did try to commit to shots, she was so heavy and try to commit into those shots. Valentina was able to just change levels and take her down easily. This fight was extremely easy to score. Not a ton that went on there. It was just Valentina just kind of big sister in her and taking her down, did everything she needed to do to secure the win again. And hopefully now she'll open up in her next fight. But she did everything possible and she secured the win. This was a 50-45 fight, and that wasn't even close. It wasn't even close.
Like I said, Kush, you're welcome. Let's move on, Kush.
Diego Lopez versus Brian Ortega. This was picture perfect, exactly how I pictured this fight going. I did know that there was the potential for Brian Ortega to be able to really use his veteranness, which he did. He did show that at times. He was able to still kind of pressure and come forward and start to land his combinations. But I just felt like the youthfulness of Diego and the aggressiveness in him was going to take over. And it showed. He was just powerful. He was aggressive. He was pressuring. He was fast. He was strong. Yeah, and it just, you know, 30-27 fight, I believe.
Yeah, no, 100%. I'm going to tell you something about Diego Lopez. If nobody has really caught on to it, he starts hot from the beginning. He'll throw that right hook, right. He catches people, dude. Sometimes there are two damn hooks where he's able to, he has that good timing with that shot. I mean, he comes in hot. And if you're not ready with a guy like Bron Ortega, it takes him a very long time in order for him to kind of get going. But either way, man, I underestimated Diego Lopez. I mean, I personally believe that he's a fight or two away from actually fighting for the title. I was expecting Brian to bring in the wrestling, man, just how he did with Rodriguez. He was able to clinch him, take him down. But I will say this, man, Diego Lopez is one dangerous dude. He just proved to me that he is a top five fighter. I mean, will the UFC, again, want to push him like they pushed a lot of guys because he's very marketable? I mean, could he potentially fight against a guy like Volkanovski? You know, Volkanovski's not going to get the next title shot. And I guarantee you that Volkanovski is going to have to be careful with a guy with serious and vicious power like a guy like Diego Lopez. And that person, at this point, I don't think I'm ever going to doubt him again, Kush. You know, he hurt. Not only did he beat Brian, but he dominated Brian Ortega. And will Brian Ortega, he's been through wars with Volkanovski. He's been through wars with Holloway. And then he's been through a one-sided war with a guy like Lopez. Like, man, Brian may, if he's not careful, dude, like, he may not come back the same. That's too many hard war fights where a lot of this shit is taxing. And, you know,
he's a Chicano. He's a Chicano, Holmes. You can't say that, bro. You can't say that. Chicanos, he's always going to be ready to come back. You know, that's my Mexican homie, bro. I'm saying, Vato, don't say that. You know, viva la raza. Don't do that, bro. But that's the thing, though. We've thought that before. We've thought that about a guy like Brian Ortega before. But then you saw how he came back against Korea Zombie. We saw that. And he looked great. Shaved the hair. Came back. It was a new identity. Throwing spinning strikes and everything. So we can never count a guy like Brian Ortega out. If he's found it before, and he's still relatively young, I think he could potentially find it again. But Diego Lopez just is hungry, found his groove in that octagon. And what a fight that's going to be versus a guy like Volkanovski. Volkanovski, I think he might still be levels above some of these guys because we have seen Diego Lopez fight Dan Ige, and coming on later on in that third round, it seemed like he was fading. Now, a guy like Volkanovski that's used to fighting five rounds after five rounds after five rounds, how does a guy like Diego Lopez fare with a guy like that? I don't know, and I want to see it.
If I'm in Lopez's position, I would definitely call for a Volkanovski fight.
1,000%.
And I do believe Lopez could finish him, dude. Volkanovski, his chin's gone, dude. A head kick.
Chill out, Henry.
Don't be like this. I gotta speak the truth, man. I you know, there ain't no DC in here, man. I don't work for ESPN. I work for the damn truth. But let's talk about the fight of the night, Kush.
Let's talk about the fight of the night. Zell Huber versus Rui Esteban. The Argentinian. Man, I got to make up a new nickname for him. When I see him in the gym in a couple of days, I got to make up a new nickname for him because my man came out. He came out to the Roy Jones. And then went out there was looking like Roy Jones. You seen the combination? You see how relaxed he was? Man, just little head movements. And I was so surprised by that because we hadn't really seen him stand in the center and have to fight like this. Usually he throws his combination, lands with the head kick, and he's gotten highlight reel knockouts. But for him to stay in here and battle with a guy like Zell Huber, who was a guy that was a lot of hype on because of his finishes and his abilities as well. These were two fantastic fighters. The UFC did a phenomenal job matching these guys up, and what a fight this was. I mean, both guys landing shots. But look at Esteban rolling. He gets clipped with the left hand, I believe, and he gets dropped, but he stays in there. He battles back up to his feet. For the guy that was smaller in stature, I mean, he made up for it with just head movement, being able to stay on the inside, his combination, how relaxed he was. Man, this was a fantastic fight. I remember watching this and I was hyped. I was hyped sitting in my living room. I was hyped for this fight. And man, Henry, this was, I think this is the fight that they should have been getting $300K for bonuses.
Yeah, no, 100%. Well, I tell you what, though, I will say this, dude. Like, you know, Esteban, dude, I want to call him the Argentine nightmare, because this dude is a damn nightmare. But I was going to say, man, if there's one thing, Esteban, I hope you're watching this, man. And I'm going to send you a message, too. You need to start adding your wrestling, because he is vicious with his hands. But he also did get clipped. So either way, does he have the heart of a lion? 100%. But I think he needs to take a pace from your book, Kamaru. Is he able to add some of those level changes to be able to get takedowns? Because people are now, the more film and the more the more you got fight video out there from you, the more that people are going to study and the smart people are going to know that, you know what? This guy is an inside fighter. He likes to go to the body, comes up top, or he'll go up top, go to the body. I mean, is he vicious? His timing? He kept doing that spinning back punch quite a bit. I mean, this dude is going to be a problem, but the way he becomes a problem or a potential contender is he needs to start taking people down. He needs to start kicking a little bit more. But I will say this, Esteban, I am a fan.
Wow. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And yes, obviously, being able to mix in the grappling aspect of the game, that's something that's only going to elevate him and allow for his striking to be better. But, I mean, also, he threw almost, I believe DC called it 1,000 punches when he had Zell Huber hurt, but he was still able to continue. He didn't gas himself out, even though it looked like it was that. He was still able to continue. But I have to also tip my hat off and a salute to Zell Huber. I mean, did you see him after all those shots were coming? He was rolling. He was dipping and rolling and rolling and dipping and rolling and dipping and rolling. I mean, what a! I watched both guys, and especially after he was hit with that right hand and he was drunk driving, bro. The whole time he was just drunk driving. He was trying to stay alive, and he was still drunk driving, just rolling, rolling, rolling with the punches, rolling with the punches. And Esteban couldn't get the finish. But what a fantastic fight, both guys. I think they deserve 100K and not just 50K for the bonuses. It's cards like this that you do give those big bonuses for, because, and I'm sure Dana is a phenomenal boss. I'm sure Dana, it's something that if he appreciates, Dana's gonna slide you. He's gonna slide you something. So hats off to both men. I can't wait to see their next fights. And also coming out to Roy Jones, fighting like that. And did you see the video, Henry? Did you see the video of him in backstage where Roy Jones actually got to go back there and meet him and talk to him?
Yeah, no, you're telling me about it, bro. That's awesome. What's up?
That's right. That's right there. That's what my heart is all about. That's what I love. I absolutely love to see when you pay your respects to the greats like that, and then you come out and completely deliver. Oh, man, and Roy Jones is sitting right there, K-side, watching this. And think about how he's feeling, knowing that I made this song while I was competing and I did my thing. And these young men and women were able to watch that, draw some inspiration from that, come out to my song, and go out there and deliver performances like that. It was phenomenal. It warms my heart to see something like that. And, man, what a performance. What a performance.
Yeah, no, 100%. Man, there's also a bunch of great fights, man. I feel like the dark horse out of maybe this whole fight card was, you know, Norma Dumont, and I was able to kind of she's been wanting to turn on your fight ready, to get some expertise. But I remember giving her talking to her about the game plan. I remember sending her a message and be like, hey, you know, this girl's she's a bull, dude. You got to be the matador. You got to be able to do those lateral movements to be able to catch it with certain things. And that's exactly what she did. So she followed a great game plan from her coaches of learning how to fight backwards. And when somebody knows how to fight backwards, you know, it's these people become it becomes a whole nother level for them, because anybody, it's standard to be able to come forward and press forward and go. But when you have the ability to get your lateral movements, cut the angles, and bop, 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 overhand, left hook, right hand, I mean, talk about a new contender in the division. I do believe that Norma, because of the way she was able to, you see that gash on Irena's face, dude. I don't know if that was an elbow or punch.
It was a headbutt.
Whatever that was, it probably should have stopped that damn fight. I mean, she could potentially be scarred for life. And I think if there's a dark horse at 135 pounds, and this girl came from 145, and she's stacked, if you know what I'm saying, she is going to be a problem. She is going to be a problem for anybody at 135 pounds, Coach.
You're absolutely right. I think watching the fight, I think Irena just fought. I was wondering the whole night what was wrong with some of these like fighters. They seemed like their feet were stuck in mud. Irena just kept throwing a left hook. She followed Norma the whole fight, barely cut her off, and just kept throwing a left hook. It was very rare for me to see a jab straight from her or a jab straight body, which I consider one of the best boxers in that division because she is able to mix in the hand. But this fight, she was just throwing a left hook, followed Norma, and did throw a left hook. And Norma just did what she had to do, float around the octagon, and she showed her grit too because when she did get hit, she came back with some harder shots. So you're right. Norma is on that short list for potential title challenger. So hats off to Norma Dumont. I mean, what a phenomenal fight. There was a lot of great fights. I think the fight that I would just a fight that I think set things off and really exemplified what this was about, that Mexican fighting spirit, was, man, Ronaldo Rodriguez. I mean, fighting Ode Osborne, it was apparent from jump. Ode Osborne was a couple, if it was all the way up to level 10, Ode Osborne was at level 10 with speed of the striking, and Rodriguez was at level 5. But at some point, he showed what that Mexican spirit was all about. He was stuck in the triangle for damn near almost 2 minutes. Did not tap where it looked like he was going to be out. He didn't tap. He got out. He kept pushing forward, kept getting his takedowns until he eventually wore down Ode Osborne and was able to get that decision. And I think that really set the tone for that main card. So hats off to both guys. This was an incredible card. Also, Raul, you know, Rosas, got the decision again, first fight of the night, you know, and it wasn't great for all the Mexicans. I believe they went 2-6 of the night, but hey, they showed their fighting spirit, and that's what it's all about. So it was fun. It was a phenomenal card, all in all. The Sphere was phenomenal. Excellent production. Hats off to you, Dana White, Hunter Campbell, Sean Shelby, Mick Maynard, Heidi Dean, everybody, the whole staff. You guys did a phenomenal job. And, of course, we're going to make sure that we put in show you guys how we did with our underdog picks. But with our underdog picks, which this card was crazy for me. It was crazy for me. But all in all, you know, first, let's give a quick shout out to our partners at Underdog Fantasy, the best place to play fantasy sport. As always, their pick'em game is as easy as choosing higher or lower on a variety of player stats like significant strikes, takedowns, and knockdowns. Here's how we did on the whole card, UFC 306. I believe we tied.
Hey, so we got a tie.
We tied. It's, man. So, we tied, and so I gotta, we gotta, hey, we tied, so don't ask about no egg, you know, don't ask about no egg. Maybe next time.
What did I get wrong with Marab? Fight time, is that what it is?
Takedowns. You said higher than, you said basically he was going to get 7 takedowns, and Marab got 6 takedowns.
No way.
Yeah, way. Now he got 6. No, you want me to show you the stats?
We're gonna have to fact check that. No. I said fact check, not fact take.
He got 6 out of 15 takedowns. So yeah, you were just under that. But that's surprising. Look at the total strikes for a significant strikes for a guy like Sean O'Malley. That's very, very surprising. I'm anxious to see where he goes from here. But it was a fantastic card. And remember, across the street, something great was going on, bro. Underdog has more than just UFC picks. Tonight is Monday Night Football, and Underdog has picks for that and every other major sport.
Underdog is available in 30-plus states, including California, Texas, and New York. Use code P4P when you sign up to support the show. Click the link in the bio to get started.
Henry, across the street, it was something going down, too. It was a fun-filled weekend. You know, yeah, I was hearing
mariachi. You tell me what's going on.
It was. I was hearing mariachi.
Across the street in the hotel lobby.
I don't know what you're talking about. But anywho, Canelo Alvarez took on Edgar Berlanga, and it was a good fight. It was a good fight, Henry, but it just – Canelo did what Canelo does, and it was just something I was so impressed with. When I watch him fight, Canelo is – and the same thing that Trevor tells me all the time. Canelo, no one builds like Canelo builds in a fight. No one builds like he does. He slowly, from round one, starts to become a giant. And a giant, and he grows, and he grows, and he grows, and he grows till about round 9, 10, 11. Canelo is just a boulder rolling down the hill that you can't stop. And Edgar Berlanga just, he looked great. I take nothing away from him. He looked great. He let me know that he can stay in there with someone like Canelo. The only problem is he didn't do enough. And I know if he actually assesses this, he's going to say, I could have done more. I didn't do enough, because when he was actually jabbing and he was actually throwing his strikes, he was putting up a good fight. He was putting up a great fight. He took Canelo's shot. Canelo hit him hard plenty of times, and you could see how much of a veteran Canelo was. Canelo was hitting him to the arms, hitting him to the body, hitting him to the elbows. Canelo was such a veteran, but Edgar was able to stay in there. He was landing his jabs. He didn't jab enough. We spoke with him, and if you haven't seen that episode, go back and check that out. Of Edgar talking about his plans of how he was going to deal with Canelo. He just didn't do enough. Canelo slowly backed him up and backed him up and backed him up until where Edgar was his back was on the ropes, and Canelo was just basically teeing off and landed shots. But when Edgar wanted to fight back, he was able to fight back. But besides that, Canelo dominated the whole fight. And of course, landing that left hook, crazy left hook in round three that floored Edgar Berlanga. All in all, fantastic fight. I liked it.
Yeah, I tell you, what surprised me a little bit about this fight is Edgar did fight a little more cautious, as he should, because you do have to respect the power of Canelo. And, you know, and obviously Canelo does a really good job of just walking people down, dude. He'll move his head at times, or sometimes, you know, he took some jabs and some right hands from Edgar Berlanga. But you can tell, man, Edgar Berlanga really respected Canelo, as you should. And I think at the beginning, he caught Canelo's respect right away. You know, he'd go to the body and then fake up top and then boom, and then land that hook to be able to drop him in the third. But, I mean, obviously, Canelo is the real deal, but we still want to see Canelo versus David Benavidez. You know, or we want to see Canelo versus,
I don't know,
versus you know, potentially a Terrence Crawford. But I think either way, Canelo, stay active. You're not going to fight those big names, because we do, you know, we do want to see you fight more, and particularly if you're not fighting big names. I personally think you should stay active, Kamar.
I like it. No, you're right. And this fight sold out. Did great. There was action in the fight. There was a little bit of drama. Both guys was taunting each other. It was still a fantastic fight, even though it wasn't the big name across from him that we would have kind of liked to see, like a David Benavidez or a Terrence Crawford, or shall I say, AKA Kendrick Lamar. Henry, why didn't do my dog like that, dog? Why didn't do my dog? And the crazy thing is, we just actually had a great talk and a great sit down with Terrence Crawford. And then he comes to the event, and the first event you come to, they call Kendrick Lamar. Oh my God, who's getting fired?
Yeah, Kendrick. But that tells you, man, that tells you that Crawford, he still probably has to earn some of that respect still. He's earned ours. But I'm talking about to the masses of the world, dude. They really got to know who a guy like Terrence Crawford is. I mean, this is legit the pound for pound, the best boxer in combat sports.
Absolutely. Sitting next to His Excellency Turki Alsheikh. I mean, it was yeah, whoever did that, hey, they're about to have a nice talking to on Monday. They might just come to the office with their box. They box packed already. Like, yeah, I know I'm out of here. Damn. But all in all, I mean, Canelo Alvarez delivered once again. And you could just still tell, like, people still love that. People still love the anticipation of him fighting. I feel like that's kind of where there's a little bit of a difference with Floyd. When Floyd was on his way out, of course, people still showing up for Floyd. People still show up for Floyd. But it was just not as much of an anticipation as we're still kind of seeing from a guy like Canelo Alvarez. And I attest that to maybe the fighting styles, to where in a fight, Floyd ain't going to let you touch him. You're not gonna hit Floyd uncontrollably. He's gonna duck, move, and you know, the best defensive fighter that we've ever seen. Floyd's not gonna let you touch him. To where Canelo will cover up in that high guard, walk you down, and you're still getting shots off. To where it still looks like a competitive fight to the masses. And I think people will continue to buy his fights. People will continue to watch it for sure. I'm telling you, it's like I'm hearing mariachi music in every casino I'm walking by this weekend, because it's. That's how much he brought out to Vegas. I mean, people from Mexico are all over here, yeah, right now because of Canelo.
I think the biggest thing with me, Kamaru, is I'm curious to see the pay per view numbers on the Sphere, and I'm curious to see the pay per view numbers for Canelo's fight. You know, because it is whether people want to accept it or not. Back in the day, Trinidad de la Hoya did some crazy numbers. This was Mexico versus Puerto Rico, and. It's crazy, dude. But we have a question for the casual. Go ahead, Kamaru. You want to read it?
All right, guys. Question from a casual this week. It said, how much as a fighter does a crazy atmosphere like the Sphere around the fight affect you in your preparation or in the octagon? Is there anything that you can do to prepare for it? I think for like myself, Henry, I think – obviously, when you're in there, when you're locked in, it's 25,000 people, but you cannot hear. You don't care to hear them. You're not focused on them. You're focused on the danger right in front of you. Obviously, we have times where there's moments where you kind of zone out a little bit and you hear the crowd a bit. But for the most part, you're focused on them and you can hear your corners or potentially their corners. And so I think it doesn't – that atmosphere, when you're in danger like that, you don't give a shit about the atmosphere. I'm in danger here. Somebody's trying to take my head off. So I need to defend myself and I need to take his head off. So I'm focused on that. But to prepare for it, honestly, for me, what I would do and I like to do is I started sparring. Because usually when you're in the gym, you're sparring with everybody sparring at the same time. There's a lot of noise. There's a lot of things that are distracting. I would just spar where it's just me. Spar just me, so where I'm not getting all the distractions of all of that. And I think that's just something that kind of helped prepare me for a moment like that. But yeah, all in all, I think you just got to be focused on what you're doing.
Yeah. What about 100%. You? Yeah, 100%. I think for me, I really don't care, dude. Like, a lot of that stuff is just a facade to me. I've been competing, and I think this is what wrestling has really helped us, Kamaru, is we've wrestled against the toughest dudes in the damn country in a freaking high school gym, and there's maybe two people in the stands that, you know what I'm saying? So I feel like, in the sense, we're not spoiled in that sense. So whether we fight in front of three people in the stands or 30,000 people, like, I think for us, like, coming from wrestling, I think it's prepared us. So I can't speak for the rest, but I mean, I've been competing longer than I have been actually, you know, longer than freaking my, I guess, the longer than I've been living. Does that make any sense? Or does it make any sense? But whatever that is it's a competing is part of my life, and it's I don't know any different. And I think, you know, you always feel those nerves, but at the end of the day, you have to see it as a game. When you see it as a game, it's you gotta learn how to win the game. Whether whomever may be in the stands, I remember when I beat Demetrius Johnson, they had Arnold Schwarzenegger that was there, Mike Tyson was the front row. This is at the Staples Center. Mark Wahlberg, I mean, you had the biggest freaking superstars there, and I ain't give a fuck. So it's what it is. It's you guys get over it, and if not, I mean, that's on you. I don't know what else to say.
Right. And guys, yeah, we had an amazing time out in Vegas. We have some amazing interviews coming out. Like we mentioned, you guys will get to see us have a sit down with, you know, Umar Nurmagomedov and get to know a little bit more about him and what's next for him. and the plans. But guys, make sure that you stay tuned. Every Thursday, we have new episodes coming for you guys. Make sure you go out there and you like and you subscribe at pound for pound. And guys, as always, myself, I am the Nigerian Nightmare, Kamaru Usman.
Henry Cejudo, a.k.a. Triple C.
And we are out.